Hello, Michael. Hello, Ernesto. Namaskaram.
Hello.
What role should the Yamas and Niyamas play in someone who has a good intellectual understanding of Bhagavan's teachings, but who hasn't developed a fairly balanced self and who has all kinds of emotional disorders, lack of discernment, which is reflected in his life, in all kinds of lack of congruence between feeling, thinking, and acting?
Michael, sorry, in this way, no? Clear something, no? Maybe you don't know, I don't know if you know to Jack Engler and Ken Wilber, no? They wrote a book, no? 10 or 20 years ago about transformation of consciousness. And in this book, this psychotherapist and Buddhist professor, no? This Engler said that it's impossible that anyone can be no one, no? And the explanation is that a person that has an ego and vasanas very strong, no? To traduce to our teachings, no?
Yes.
And very easy going the to drink or to and very disordered mind, a very intellect, very confused, and all of that is very complicated. That arriving to the Advaita, no, to the Ramana's teachings, can achieve, no, the sufficient and the enough interest to attend himself. Meanwhile, he don't pass for these niyamas on yamas and making a structure very more order of his mind, more clear about what is wrong and what is not wrong, to can achieve to real be no one, no? to attempt himself absolutely, no. This is the way of this question, no?
Okay. I'm not sure that I understood that very clearly. Shall I answer something about the question, and then you can try and explain this more afterwards? So, I mean, I'll try and say something that, from what I understood of this question. Yamas and niyamas are the first two steps in yoga. It's in yoga that they give importance to these yamas and niyamas. Both of them are various forms of self-restraint. When people try to explain the difference, sometimes people say yamas means the things you shouldn't do. Niyamas are the things you should do. In other words, the don'ts and the do's. Some people say the yamas are concerning external behavior. The niyamas are about the internal things. So people give different explanations, but actually there's a lot of overlap between these. And it's difficult to say precisely why some things are counted as yamas and other things are counted as niyamas. So we can take the two together as generally restraints of various kinds. These are preliminary. And I mean, for example, Bhagavan didn't talk much about yamas and niyamas. He said of all the niyamas, the best one is Nitya sattvika ahara, taking sattvic food in moderate quantities. That's the best of all. But the reason why Bhagavan didn't talk much about such things is that if we are drawn to this path of self-investigation, we will only be drawn to this path of self-investigation if these yamas and niyamas, at least to some extent, natural to us. We may not be perfect in following the yamas and niyamas, that is, the principles of truthfulness, ahimsa, all these. I can't remember what they all are. They're different lists, enumerate in different books, they enumerate different lists. I think in Patanjali's Yoga Sutra, there are five yamas and five niyamas. In some Upanishads, there are 10 of each. But what they are, it doesn't matter. Generally, they are the sort of behaviors you would expect of any good person. So these are, yes, in a sense, we can say these are requirements, but we don't have to worry about these requirements. The very fact that we've been drawn to this practice of self-investigation, if we're truly attracted to this and we're truly putting it into practice, we must at least, if not perfectly, we will at least to a great extent, the yamas and niyamas will be natural to us.
But sorry, Michael, what you said, no, that some people being attractive, no, for this
yes,
way. No?
Yes.
But some people are so miss in his life, have a real pain, or well, real, the illusion of his mind and of his ego make this pain very, very big, and knows the Advaita, no, knows the Ramana's teaching, and begin to make a fantasy in his mind, no, that they become absolutely imperturbable, no, absolutely irreductible, and they, in any case on his life, and they fantasy that this is my way, and include, make a fantasy in his mind that they can to be self-attentiveness, and maybe for a second he or she can be attentive to himself, but the most of this attractiveness that they, or attraction that they feel, is about of what I want to be, you know, is an I that wants to be an alter ego, no?
Yeah,
it's a jnani, want to be a jnani, want to, no? But yes, his life is absolutely in a big disorder,
yes,
and they have a little interest to attempt himself, but there are too much illusions in relation.
Yeah, that I wouldn't say. When I say really attracted to Bhagavan's teaching, that's why I say genuinely attracted. I mean, really putting this into practice. I have come across people, for example, in the old days when there used to be comments on my blog, there was one person who used to comment a lot. And he boasted that he was doing Atmavichara. And he was constantly putting down people and putting down other people, calling them knuckleheads. And he was persistently abusive to people. And I thought to myself, if this person were really practicing Atmavichara, he wouldn't be constantly putting down other people. And his understanding of Bhagavan's teachings was very gross. He had a fixed idea, but everything is according to prarabdha. So whatever actions we do, if I'm being abusive to people, that's my prarabdha. He took excuses. So he really didn't understand Bhagavan's teachings correctly. So though he was boasting that he was practicing Atmavichara, it seemed to me, of course, who am I to judge others, but it seemed to me that he's just deluding himself. But he's liking to think that he's doing Atmavichara, but if he were really doing Atmavichara, it would reflect in his behavior. Mm-hmm. There would be more humility, there would be if we're really following this path, we will have no inclination to be rude to others, to cause offense to others, to put others down. If we see others people don't understand, we may say something to try and help them understand, but we won't start calling them, oh, you're a knucklehead, you're a this. I mean, much worse things he called people. So some people may be deluding themselves, thinking that they're following this path, but they're not. Their actions will show, but they're really not following this path. But I'm talking, when I say people are attracted to this path, people who are really attracted to trying to humbly understand what Bhagavan has taught us and to try our best. We may not be succeeding. We may be failing in our attempt to turn within, but at least we have a genuine wish to do so. We are genuinely trying to do so. Those are the people who I say are attracted to Bhagavan, and such people, the yamas and niyamas will be natural to them. Regarding people who are deluding themselves, or people, as you say, people who think that this path is all about becoming a jnani, so that if I become a jnani, then I'll be an aggrandized I. Superman, I won't be just Superman. An ordinary I like all these other people. I'll be a very special person, because I won't be an Agnani, I'll be a Jnani. So I'm not just an ordinary person, I'm a very special person. This is a complete misunderstanding of what the teachings are all about. There's no such thing as a self-realized person. If we're self-realized, if we're a Jnani, we're not a person. If we're a person, we're not a Jnani. So, if we're really attracted to this path, we will read Bhagavan's teachings carefully, and we'll try and understand what Bhagavan is saying. And we'll notice that he says this here and he says that there. Are these two consistent? And we'll try and understand why in some contexts he says this, and in other contexts, he seemed to say other things. So we'll try and get a deeper understanding of why in certain contexts, certain teachings are appropriate, and in other contexts, deeper teachings are appropriate. So that is one of the hallmarks of following this path. There will be humility. We won't think ourselves, we will think ourselves worse than everyone else. That is what I mean when I say someone who is genuinely attracted to Bhagavan. Someone who thinks that by practicing self-inquiry, they're going to gain something. They're going to become a jnani or be some grander type of person. They have not understood at all. And we're talking about people who have genuinely trying to understand and trying to put Bhagavan's teachings into practice.
And sometimes when some people understand this, no?
Mm.
Conclude that they don't need to continue study the Bhagavan's teachings because don't want more to be a self-realization, no? Jnani or similar. Mm.
Yeah,
and forget that the most large of these paths is to drop off all what we don't know, to drop, no? Is what we don't really are, no?
Yes.
Yeah, I see. So in this, I don't know if you can correct me, Ernesto, if I'm wrong. I think what the question tries to convey is the sense that on an ego, on the level of ego, you have to develop a sense of self as ego, as not a weak person or not a to have a mature ego in the sense of worldly pursuits, like with relation, you know, the level of relationships, jobs. Emotions with people, relationship with people, and so on, and before dropping all this idea that you are an ego to start with, no? But I don't know if I've heard some videos by Ken Wilber and so on, but he also has a psychological background, or I mean, he talks about also the subconscious mind and many things that are compatible with the Indian philosophies and so on. Yeah, but I think that it includes that part of on the part of the more European side of it, not like Jung and so on. But that's my guess. Yeah? I don't really know Ken Wilber.
Okay, works. I don't know anything about Ken Wilber. Regarding what you say, a developed ego or whatever, that is, it's not exactly an ego. There must be a certain degree of maturity. Maturity comes with purification of the mind. Mm-hmm. To the extent that the mind is purified, that is, to the extent that the Vishaya Vasanas are weakened, to that extent, as I say, the yamas and niyamas will be natural to someone who is really, who really wants to follow this path, who really wants to understand Bhagavan's teachings and to follow this path. The yamas and niyamas, and the basically being a good person, not being. There has to be a certain purity of mind and heart for us, in order a certain degree of purity of mind and heart, or we won't be attracted to this path. We won't be deeply attracted, to really putting it into practice. If there's a maturity of mind and heart, a purity of mind and heart, then automatically that will be reflected in our relationships and how we live in the world and everything. So to my mind, this question really, it seems to be asking about someone who really, that if we have a good intellectual understanding of Bhagavan's teachings, we will have a good intellectual understanding of Bhagavan's teachings only to the extent to which we put them into practice. There are many people with superficial understanding. They read something, but they don't have a deep understanding because they haven't put it into practice. So I wouldn't call that a good intellectual understanding. We see so many people, they read Advaita philosophy, or they read Bhagavan's teachings, they get a half-baked understanding, they pick up a few ideas, and then they misapply them. They one thing that nowadays many people say, oh, there's no ego. Bhagavan says there's no ego. So yes, Bhagavan did say there's no ego, but he also said, if ego doesn't exist, everything doesn't exist. That is, ultimately, the ultimate truth is there's no ego. But who then is seeing all this multiplicity? It's only when we rise as ego that all this multiplicity seems to exist. So though ego doesn't actually exist, it does seem to exist in the view of ego. So Bhagavan's teachings, Bhagavan, though he says the ultimate truth is that ego doesn't exist. And if you investigate it, you will find that truth for yourself. But now there seems to be an ego, and because there seems to be an ego, there seems to be a world and everything else. So we shouldn't just take a few, cherry pick a few ideas and take them out of context. That's what many people do. Many people just have a very half-baked understanding of Bhagavan's teaching, and some of them begin to think they're qualified to, because they've understood something, and they now know enough to convince people that they've understood something. They can now claim that I am self-realized, and now I can teach you, and you can, for a bargain price, you can attend my retreats for $1,000. You can attend my Zoom meetings for $100, or even a special concessionary price if you're if they make it into a business. There are so many people like this nowadays who are charging for all these things. If you listen to what they're saying, most of them have a half-baked understanding. They really don't have a deep understanding. If they had a deep understanding, they would automatically be more humble. They wouldn't be inclined to use these things for financial gain, or for gathering followers, or for aggrandizing themselves. They would be very, very humble. what is it, who is this question about? Is this question about someone who is genuinely trying to understand Bhagavan's teachings, who's genuinely living up to the standards expected, or at least not perfectly, none of us are living perfectly up to the standards of, but at least to some extent? That is, are we someone to whom yamas and niyamas are natural, or someone to whom yamas and niyamas are totally alien? If niyamas and niyamas are totally alien to us, we are not yet fit to follow Bhagavan's path. If we will be fit to follow Bhagavan's path where we need not even think about yamas and niyamas, because it's so obvious that we should behave in such a way. We should be truthful, we should not cause harm, we should, I can't remember what all the others are. So, but as I say, yamas and niyamas will be natural for someone who is really ready to follow Bhagavan's path, who really wants to follow Bhagavan's path. What is Bhagavan's path about? It's all about subsiding, subsiding, subsiding.
When I said a healthy ego, for example, no, if we speak, an ego is healthy, no? The ego is the problem, no? No, but in the way to disappear, no, as an ego.
Yeah. These we can say mature.
Mature, no? Maybe it's better. Mature ego is the result of the weakened vasanas, no?
As we can reduce
no, the power of our vasanas, we are a more mature ego, no? And for the reduce of the vasanas, sometimes it's necessary to not react to something, no? For example. But sometimes it's useful to act something that you don't want to do. For example, no, if you have too many fear, no, to drive in the night, for example, or to drive with your car in a city because you think that a monster goes to you. If you can go to the car in the night and cross the city, no, you are reducing your vasanas too, no. Because sometimes too many people only see the side, no, that don't react, but don't see the other side, that when you have fear or you are shy and you try to go to cross, no, your limitation, your maybe it's a form too of reduce or weaken your vasanas.
Maybe, but when. When once we've come to Bhagavan's path, the most effective way to reduce the strength of our vasanas is to practice self-investigation. All other things become unnecessary. Once we are drawn to this practice, the other things are necessary. What you're talking about, people overcoming certain fears or so on, something. Why do we want to overcome fears? Because having a fear of something is a type of handicap, particularly if it's an unreasonable fear, a phobia or something. Yeah, it's a type of handicap, and that holds us back in this world. If we want to do well in this world, we need to overcome all our little fears and so on. So there can be different motivations for wanting to overcome fears. Supposing we've come to Bhagavan's path and we've got certain irrational fears, we won't be concerned about them. Okay, it's the nature of this person whom I now seem to be to have certain irrational fears. Let it be. We won't be concerned about it because we're not concerned about the person we seem to be. We're trying to find out who am I. So we're not trying to we're not trying to become a better person or trying to become a more.
I don't say it in this sense. No, it's when I confront my fear.
Yeah.
Not to be a better character, not to be a better person. No.
Yeah.
In this confront, maybe I can. I can go inside after that with more easily, because this fear that paralyzed me, when I confront it, not to to be a better person, to be a better character, no? Maybe this help, no?
I can't say. Maybe. But I mean, it's very difficult to answer because these are hypothetical questions. That is, now we have come to this path of self-investigation. In order to come to this path of self-investigation, our mind must already have been purified to a certain extent. So the mind can be purified and is purified by following other paths. This is what Bhagavan has explained, for example, in Upadesha India. But if you do actions, instead of your actions being motivated by desire for some personal gain, if you act without, in a disinterested manner, not for what you get from the action, but just for the love of God, such actions will purify the mind and show the way to liberation, Bhagavan says in verse 3. Then in verse 4, he says the actions are of three kinds. There's actions of mind, speech, and body. And the nishkarmiya karma done by body is called puja, by mind is called japa, and by speech is called japa, and by mind is called dhyana. And in this order, they are efficacious in purifying the mind. So Bhagavan is talking about the different actions we can do on the bhakti marga that will purify the mind. The aim of all such practices is just for purification of mind. So yes, there are ways other than atmavichara to purify the mind. So maybe if confronting a fear that we have or something, that may help. I can't say. I mean, Bhagavan alone can. It's only we can't generalize about these things. That is, when Bhagavan is talking, for example, in Upadesha Undia about these different puja, japa, and dhyana, we can't say everyone who is doing puja is purifying their mind, because it's not the action that is purifying the mind, it's the love with which we do it. There are many people who do puja, but they do it for some ulterior motive. They do it because they think if they worship God, God will bestow on them wealth, health, and whatever else they want. So it's not the actions that are causing that are purifying the mind. It is the love with which those actions are done. Instead of doing those actions for gaining any fruit, any benefit, you're not doing it to gain anything. You're doing it just for the love of God. So the case you ask about, trying to confront your fears, it depends on your motivation. Why are you trying to confront your fears? And why should you even be bothered about if you've actually come to this path, Bhagavan's path, we need not even be bothered about this fear. Okay, I may have some irrational fears, but doesn't matter. That's just the nature of the person I now take myself to be. I am not this person. To whom do all these irrational fears appear? We'll be turning within. So we overcome our irrational fears not by confronting them, but by turning within. But maybe for other people who are not yet drawn to this path, maybe it is necessary to confront certain fears. I don't know. I mean, this is all hypothetical, because we can't. It depends. No, it varies from case to case.
But I understand one thing, no? If this irrational fear don't avoid your self-attention, best forget it.
Yeah.
No?
Exactly.
Yeah, so it's more on a level of psychology too. I mean, in a way, having a irrational fear is part of the body we seem to be in.
Yeah.
If it's not a hindrance to our self-investigation, they shouldn't pose a problem.
What is a hindrance to self-investigation is lack of love to attend to ourselves. What is required in order to attend to ourselves? We must have great love to be self-attentive, and because and we being self-attentive entails subsiding. So when I say love to be self-attentive, that means love to subside and to be as we actually are. Without that love, we cannot follow this path. We may say, oh, I don't have enough love. Does that mean that I'm unqualified? No. The very fact that we have even a liking to follow this path means at least there's a certain degree of love. If we use that love and try and the little, however small our love may be, let us use it to try to attend to ourselves. The more we attend to ourselves, the more that love will grow.
Other thing is that you are mature to follow this path.
Yes. If we are not mature to follow this path, we will not be attracted to this. We will not be attracted to this path. The very fact that we're attracted to this path shows we have at least we have the minimum requisite maturity.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a good indication what you gave, Michael. And yes. It's a good, maybe it's true word. Maybe the motivation is the key, no?
Yeah, motivation, people, absolutely, yes.
Exactly.
Do we want to subside or do we want to rise? That is the crucial question. If we want to subside, Bhagavan's path is for us. If we want to rise and achieve so many things in this world, this is not the path for us.